If you turn to Genesis chapter 15, let's look for verses 13 and 14 in this chapter. In Genesis 15, 13 and 14, we have some details, we have some information about God making some promises to a fellow by the name of Abram. God told Abraham that his descendants were going to spend some time, several years, as slaves. He didn't specifically mention Egypt in Genesis 15, 13 and 14, but that's what God was pointing to. God said that a time would come, however, when he would judge this oppressive nation, that is Egypt. And when we move from Genesis to Exodus, we find that this promise was fulfilled just as God described. God said, I'm going to judge them. When we look at the book of Exodus, what do we find? There were nine distinct plagues that fell upon the Egyptian people. And then, of course, as we recently studied, there was the 10th plague. With this 10th plague, that was the death of the firstborn. Then, of course, Egypt told Israel it was time to go. God's promise to the people of Israel, or what became the people of Israel, was accompanied by something else. If you found that 15th chapter of Genesis, let's start with verse 13 and read verse 14 as well. And he, this is God, said unto Abram, know of a surety, that is, don't doubt this, that thy seed shall be sojourners in a land that is not theirs. And God said, while they're there, they're going to serve these folks, that is, the Egyptians. God also said, here's my promise. They're going to afflict them. That is, your descendants are going to suffer ill treatment for 400 years. And then verse 14. And also that nation whom I serve, I'm going to judge them. And afterward, the text says, shall they come out with, notice this, great substance. God said, here's going to be the way that things go for your descendants, Abraham. They're going to suffer. They're going to be there for at least 400 years. But a time is going to come when I'm going to judge the oppressors. And not only will I judge the oppressors, not only will I free your descendants, but God promised this man more than 400 years prior to this time. He said they're going to leave with great substance. If we move forward to the book of Exodus, and this is where we've been studying Exodus chapter 12, verses 35 and 36, we do find that God's people were delivered. And not only were God's people delivered, but at least twice in the book of Exodus, we read about God's people being delivered, being sent away with great wealth. Before leaving Egypt, Exodus 12, 35 and 26 say that the people of Israel, they left with jewels of silver. They left with jewels of gold. And also they departed with clothing. God decisively delivered his people from Egyptian bondage, and he even made them quite wealthy. Thus, when we look at the promises made by God in Genesis 15, they were not only fulfilled, but they were fulfilled precisely in the way that God said. We sometimes sing songs. In fact, a little later tonight, we're going to sing a hymn about standing on the promises to God, or standing on the promises made by God. And tonight in this lesson, we want to think about some of the promises that God has made, the promise-making God. Before we do that, it may be helpful to set this up by way of contrast. Let's take just a couple of minutes and think about the promises that are made by men. If you have any interaction with people, maybe it's at school, maybe it's in the home, maybe it's in the workplace, we receive and we make promises to people. As we think about the promises that maybe we make or others make to us, it's not uncommon to find broken promises. There may have been a time in our life when we were promised a job. And maybe that promised job was something that we were depending on, and that promised job simply didn't materialize. It may be that we were promised a relationship. Someone said, I want to date you, I want to love you, I want to spend some time with you, and that turned out to be absolutely false. We may have been promised a possession. Someone said, when I die, I'm going to will this to you. This is going to be yours. The person died, and that was not how the will read. Or maybe they didn't put that provision in the will. We've all lived, I think, long enough to find that politicians make promises. Lots of promises, regardless of party. And many of those political promises do not turn out to be true. We may be told, or we may tell someone, if you finally do this, then I'll do this. A person may say, well, I know you want me to go to the doctor, and I promise to call the doctor tomorrow. Well, it doesn't always work. And sometimes a person has to be very persistent before maybe a loved one goes to the doctor. Or another person may say, I know I'm involved with bad behavior, and I'm going to stop my bad behavior. I promise not to do this again. 10 minutes later, what happens? Well, they're doing it again. Some promises are broken completely, or maybe if they are fulfilled, they're fulfilled after the promised date. Other promises are made and sometimes they're partially fulfilled. And we also have, when we think about promises, some promises made, but they're unclear. Someone says, well, I'm promising this to you, but well, what exactly does that mean? What are the terms? What are the conditions? What does this promise actually involve? In my office, I have some things from some trips, and one of the things that I was thinking about because a person was in there looking at some of the items not long ago is a small Russian alarm clock. It's only about this large. I brought it back from Russia, number one, because it was cheap. Number two, because it was just kind of a novelty item instead of a useful clock. There was a translator with me when I purchased this alarm clock. We were in sort of a variety store, Ben Franklin kind of thing. And as we were purchasing the clock, waiting for the person to come over, pick it up, and ring us out, the translator said, "Do you know that this clock comes with a passport?" I said, "Well, no, I didn't." And I said, "I'm not quite sure how a passport would work with a clock." And she kind of looked at me like, "Well, you dumb American." And she beamed with pride. She said, "This comes with a passport." And I said, "Well, I'm still not quite sure what that means." And she said, "Well, let me explain how we do things in Russia." She said, "If you break this alarm clock, if you don't like it, you take it home. You can bring it back. And with your passport, if it breaks, we'll give you a new one. Or if you don't like it, with this passport, we will give you your money back." Well, I'm not sure who taught this lady English, but she was using the word passport, obviously in place of the word warranty. And then it got even more interesting, at least for me. She said, "Well, now, I've told you that. I really need to be truthful with you. This is really a worthless piece of paper because stores here don't stand behind the product. So they give you this piece of paper which says, we'll give you your money back or we'll give you a new clock, but don't expect that if you have a problem. It's just not going to work." Well, you know, when it comes to God, what kind of warranty do we get with Him? Does God say, "This is my promise, this is my word, this is my degree of faithfulness, and then we need to trust that promise, we need to depend on that promise, we need to access and secure that promise, enjoy that promise, but is it trustworthy? Can we trust the promises of God? Are God's promises always fulfilled every single time, as we saw from Exodus chapter 12 and Genesis chapter 15? Well, the comparison between these two verses, and that's why we started with that, suggests, at least with Abraham and the things involved, God was absolutely faithful, even though there were hundreds of years between point A and point B. What about now? Well, in our culture, this is, I think, an important topic to cover and teach, because we live in a time where people want things on an instant basis. If they're looking at a promise, they don't want to wait a week, a month, a year, or 10 years for a promise to be fulfilled. If you promise me this, then I probably want this today. And sometimes there is an attitude when it comes to God. "God, if you're making this promise, I want it now, I want it today, I don't want to wait." Well, is this the way that the God who makes promises works? When we look at Genesis 15 and Exodus chapter 12, we find that that is not necessarily the case. God could, and sometimes may, act on a promise immediately. But it's also possible that God, because of various circumstances, may choose to delay that promise. Maybe a day, maybe a week, maybe a month, maybe a year, maybe a decade. Maybe it's going to be fulfilled after our life has ended. But I will say this. Regardless of when God keeps His promises, He will keep His promise. And He's going to keep that in such a way where it's going to be kept sometimes in the nick of time, but He will never be late when it comes to keeping His promise. When we talk to people, maybe we have some sensitive information, maybe it's some young people sharing information, sometimes we'll say, "I'm going to tell you something, but I want you to keep this information secret. I want you to keep this information private." And the person says, "Oh yes, you can trust me." Well, they are trustworthy for today, and they're trustworthy tomorrow, but when Tuesday comes, guess what? That thing that they said, "I'm never going to share that, you can trust me, I'm going to keep my word, this will never be related to anybody," all of a sudden, within 48 hours, that promise has been broken. One of the very first things that we find when it comes to God is that He not only makes promises, but He keeps those promises. How long has it been since we've seen a rainbow? Maybe a few weeks? Maybe we'll see some others soon? If you stayed in the book of Genesis, I want to turn back a couple chapters to Genesis chapter 9, starting with verse 11 and reading down through verse 16. We see rainbows at times, and maybe we'll see some this week because of the promised rain. But when we see those rainbows, we should be reminded of the fact that we serve a God who not only makes promises, but He keeps promises. And the continuation of that keeping is for as long as a promise needs to be kept. Here's what God said concerning the bow in the sky, "And I will make..." God said, "I'm going to establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth." Verse 12. And God said, "This is the token of the covenant. This is my agreement. This is my promise, which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations." God said, "I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over all the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. That's the rainbow. 15. And I will remember my covenant. God says, I've made this promise, I've made this agreement, and I'm not going to forget it. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. The next time we see a rainbow, maybe we're walking outside after a rainstorm, maybe we're driving somewhere, and the person next to us says, look at the rainbow. We should remember that Christians serve a God who not only makes promises, but He is a God who also keeps promises. He's absolutely faithful in this regard. Not once since the time of Noah's flood has there ever been a worldwide flood. No matter where we look, it's simply not occurred. Our planet certainly has faced a lot of calamities. We've had earthquakes, we've had hurricanes, we've had mudslides, we've had tornadoes, many different disasters. And yet when we look at all those and we search for a worldwide flood, it has never occurred since the time of Noah. Several times in the Bible, and the Old Testament is certainly full of this, we have information about God's promises and God's faithfulness. Here's another one. Sarah, Abraham's wife, she had reached a time in life when she was old. She was past the childbearing years, and yet the God of promises came along and said, Sarah, you're going to have a baby. Sarah was not only promised a child, she received a child. In the book of Genesis, the 21st chapter, Genesis 21 verse 1, the text says, and Jehovah visited Sarah, as he had said. God had made this promise to the woman, and Genesis 21:1 says that's what God did. He fulfilled his word. The rest of the verse says, and Jehovah did unto Sarah as he had spoken. In other words, God says, this is my promise to you. You're going to have a baby. You're going to have a child about a year from now, and that is exactly what happened. God promised a woman a baby, and he delivered, no pun intended, on his promise. God promised that Abraham's descendants would be slaves for a period of time, but they'd be freed. And when they went out of the land of Egypt, they'd have great wealth. That promise came true in every respect. Later in the Old Testament, the book of Deuteronomy chapter 7 verse 9, we are there told that God is so faithful, he keeps his promise, he keeps his covenant for 1,000 generations. Now if you were to look at that statement literally, and you were to say, okay, God keeps his promises, God keeps his agreements, his covenants with man for 1,000 generations, and a single generation is 40 years, that would mean that every promise from God is kept for 40,000 years. Now, I don't believe that statement is literal. I think that's a figurative statement to say that God keeps his promise regardless of how much time is involved, regardless of how much difficulty is involved. But think about that literally. A person says, I'm going to make a promise, and it's going to be kept for 40,000 years. And not just that promise, but the person says, out of the 75, out of the 80 years of life that I have, every promise, it's so good, it's so dependable that I'm going to keep it for 40,000 years. It's almost beyond comprehension. But this is the claim that God makes about himself. When Joshua came to the end of his life, in the book of Joshua chapter 23, verse 14, Joshua said this, and behold, this day, I'm going the way of all the earth. And Joshua said, I want you to know. I want you to know in all your hearts. And Joshua said, I also want you to know in all your souls, in the deepest part of your being. Joshua, in giving this farewell speech, says, there's some things that I want you to think about. There's some things that I'm now leaving I want to present to you in this last sermon, so to speak. Joshua went on to say, there is not one thing, not a single thing that has failed of all the good things which Jehovah your God spake concerning you. And then Joshua goes back and talks about it again. He says, let's review the God that we've sought to serve. In the latter part of that verse, Joshua 23:14, it says, all are come to pass unto you, yet not one thing has failed thereof. Joshua, for more than 100 years, had had a chance to watch, look at, check out, and test God, and he says, let's look at the end of the matter. Let's sum things up. The God that we've served, he has not failed us. Out of all the promises, out of all the difficult things that he's led us through, he's not failed even once. Idioms are sometimes used by us to describe a person's faithfulness or other qualities. Here's some. A person may say something like, he's as honest as the day is long. Or another one of those statements might be, he is beyond reproach. We might say, I trust him, I trust her with my life. Or maybe, he'll be here. I'm watching the clock, but we really don't have to do that because he's trustworthy. I know he's going to be here. Do you know that the Bible uses some idioms when it comes to God? There are some of these same kinds of figures of speech when we deal with some of God's qualities, one of which would be faithfulness or his keeping his promises. One of these is back in the book of Psalms, and I like the King James translation of Psalm 36, verse 5. It says, God's faithfulness, that is, God's trustworthiness. When God makes a promise, it reaches to the sky. Did you know that verse was in the Bible? When God makes a promise, it's like looking up to the sky and saying, how high is that cloud? How high is, the sky up there? Now, as I think about that passage, one of the questions that comes to my mind is, what clouds does he have in mind? We might at first blush think, well, that's got to be the clouds that we see, and maybe about 3,000 feet up there. But I didn't know until this past week, or if I knew it, I'd forgotten it. But there are clouds associated with Mars. Offhand, I'm not sure exactly how far Mars is from here. I know it's a pretty good jaunt. And the Bible, if it were thinking in terms of maybe Mars, the clouds that are really far out, it's saying, hey, look up. The clouds that are way out there. That's an illustration of God's faithfulness. So when we look at the Scriptures, the Old Testament, we find that the subject is so important to the biblical writers that rainbows and clouds are used to illustrate how God keeps His promises. Then too, when we think about God's promises, God's faithfulness, it's not only illustrated by nature, but do we remember how even the devil himself argues for the fact that God keeps His promises? It's true. Remember Jesus? Matthew chapter 4, Mark 1. Jesus was being tempted by the devil. And as the Lord is out there in the midst of those temptations, what was one of the devil's temptations? Did not the devil come along and say, jump from a place? We've got here the temple. Here's the high spot in the temple. Jump down. And what's going to happen? Angels are going to be sent to rescue you. You see, the devil apparently had enough belief in God to at least admit that Jesus would be rescued by angels. He believed in the promises of God. Now, he's not acted in such a way where he recognizes that on a practical level, but at least on an intellectual level, even Satan recognizes that God is faithful to His word. Now, when the devil recognizes something about God, we should sit up and pay attention, because it is an important quality. It seems to me that as we look at the Scriptures, Satan, angelic creatures, nature, certainly deity, everything argues for God keeping His word. There is, to my knowledge, to my understanding, only one creature that is prone to sometimes question God's faithfulness or God's promises, and that's me. That's us. That's the world. Maybe that's why. As God constructed His word, Old Testament and New Testament, the faithfulness of God, the promises of God, this is something that comes up again and again and again. Sometimes as God talks about His faithfulness, especially in the Old Testament, it is put in terms of time. I'm turning now to the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 1 through 10. In just a moment, I intend to read the first 10 verses of this chapter, and I'll give you a little bit of background before we read it. Jeremiah had an important message for the people of God. Sin had caused the Jewish people to go into captivity. Captivity that was being watched over by the Babylonian people. And God said to His people after they got into Babylonian captivity, I've got a note for you. Here's a message. You're going to be there not for just a few weeks or a few months or even a few years. God says you're going to be there for decades. You're going to be in Babylonian captivity for 70 years. If God had given a promise to us and said, okay, this is what I'm going to do in 70 years, we might say, well, boy, that sure seems like it's a long time to fulfill. God, we might not be around when that promise is fulfilled. And if it's fulfilled, surely our children, for the most part, are going to see it. But still, God sometimes makes these kinds of promises, and this is what God did with the people in Babylon. Starting with verse 1 of Jeremiah 29. Now, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah, unto the prophet, sent from Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders of the captivity, and to the priests, and to the prophets, and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captivity from Jerusalem. Babylon, after that Jeconiah, some translations will say Jehoiakim, I believe, and especially the King James, the king and the queen mother, and the eunuchs and the princes of Judah and Jerusalem, and the craftsmen and the smiths, they departed from Jerusalem by the hand of Elash, the son of Shaphan, and Gemariah, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent into Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, saying, verse 4, Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all the captivity whom I have caused to be carried away captive from Jerusalem unto Babylon. Verse 5. Build ye houses. I want you to dwell in those houses. I want you to plant gardens. And while you're in Babylon, I also want you to eat of those gardens. I want you to take wives, verse 6. I want you to have sons and daughters. I want you to take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters and multiply ye there, and be not diminished. And then in 7, God says, I want you to seek the peace of the city, whither I have caused you to be carried away captive, and pray unto Jehovah for it, that's peace. For in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. For thus saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets that are in the midst of you and your diviners deceive you, neither hearken ye to their dreams which ye cause to be dreamed. For they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith Jehovah. And then verse 10, for thus saith Jehovah, after 70 years are accomplished in Babylon, God says, here's the promise. 7 decades, 70 years, God says, I promise to visit you. And God said, not only do I promise to visit you, but I'm promising to perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. God said to his people through Jeremiah, I'm faithful. I'm dependable. And here is what's going to happen to you. You're going to stay captive in Babylon. You're going to be here for this long, so you better settle down. You go out and you start planting stuff and you make it home for the next 7 decades. But God said, after that 70 years passes, it's not going to be 75, it's not going to be 80, it's not going to be 100. We're not just going to guess about it. God said, I'm faithful, and this is when I'm going to show up again to help you. And that's exactly what he did. God, though, warned, as we see in these 10 verses, that during that time there would be false prophets who would come and try to lead his people astray. The false prophets would come and say, oh, I had a dream. And God said, they're just making this stuff up. I told you what's going to happen, and this is what I promised, thus this is what's going to occur. Today, many years later, we find this same kind of thing in our society. God's word promises us various things, but you know what the world does? It comes along and waves its hand and says, oh no, that's not true. Don't believe that. You know, the God that you try to serve, the Bible that talks about him, it's a book that's out of date. Oh, that God that you try to serve, he's changed. He's old now. Scripture doesn't mean what it really says. The Lord's not come back because Christianity is a lie. That promise is never going to be fulfilled. There really is no God. Man is the only God that we have. And if there really were a God, we'd not have all the evil that we have in society. People are doing the same kinds of things that we read about in Jeremiah chapter 29. The Lord's return has waited a lot longer than 70 years. But that promise still stands. And God's going to, at the appropriate time, deliver on that promise. The Lord will come back. The things associated with the end of time will all take place. As we go through life, we need to remember, we need to keep before us each and every day that God keeps his promises. Even when people come along, Peter talked about this in the book of 2 Peter chapter 3. Where is the Lord? Where is the sign of his coming? Things continue as they've always been. God is going to keep his word, so we need to keep the faith. His promises reach up to the sky, to the clouds, and are illustrated by the rainbows that we see. Under the Old Testament, God's promises were kept again and again and again. So many examples of that Jeremiah was able to say in Lamentations chapter 3, verse 23, God's faithfulness, God's promises are great. We can find all kinds of information about God's faithfulness and promises in the Old Testament. But that's not the covenant that we now serve God by. We now serve under the New Testament. And you know, that's another interesting and I think important point. Man's covenant, the agreement that we now have from God, this New Testament, it was written with, and it was written in blood. How many times have we heard Matthew chapter 26, verse 28 read? It's the place where Jesus said, this is my blood of the covenant. Jesus said to the apostles and ultimately to all people, I'm making a new agreement with man. And I want you to know that this agreement is an agreement which is not written really with pen and ink. It's not something that we just came up with and all agreed to. Jesus said, this new covenant that I'm bringing, it is written with blood. He said, it's not the blood of a lamb. It's not the blood of some animal. It's not the blood of a man or a woman or a group of men, a group of women, or even a group of mixed people. Jesus said, this agreement is being written with and in and by my blood. Whose blood? The Son of God. The one who was deity in the flesh. Now here's my question. If God was faithful in the Old Testament time and time again, a testament which was not written with, in, and by the blood from the Son of God, what is God going to do What's he going to do when it comes to the promises made in the New Testament? If he was faithful under the old, would he certainly not be faithful with the new? Yes. Now, God can't be more faithful. We don't want to imply or suggest that he was somehow less faithful or now that he's more faithful. But the point is simply that if it was written by, with, and in the Son of God's blood, it's certainly something that we can depend on. Thus, when we read through the New Testament, we need to look at that book, read those passages in view of the fact that God will always keep his word. Now, it's true that as we look at some information in the New Testament, some of the apostles received specific promises, promises that were for the first century. It's also the case, Old and New Testaments, that when we look at some of the promises of God, some of those promises can be conditional. In other words, God has said, if you do this, I'll do this. But if you do this, then I'm going to respond in this way. And based on how we choose to live, God's going to respond because of his promise in the appropriate way. Finally, most, I think, who are here tonight are familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. This is one of the better known verses in the New Testament. It's where Paul says there's no temptation that's overtaken you, but such is common to man, and people can bear the temptation. God's going to provide the way of escape. A lot of people are familiar with that passage, but you know, I think they miss one of the most important points in 1 Corinthians 10:13. We all know about the promise of escape. We all know that God's going to help people, those kinds of things. But you know, if you look at the middle of the verse, you find what I think is the key part of the passage, and a part of the verse which is almost never discussed. Paul says three simple words there. God is faithful. I think if there's anything that you like about that passage, or if you've underlined that passage, those three words need to be highlighted. They need extra attention. All that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:13 is true when it comes to temptation, because God is, present tense, always the case, he is faithful. At some point, someone may say to us, oh, promises, promises. I'm tired of all the promises that you or someone else is making. And we can understand that. When we look at our world, it is literally full of empty promises. There are job promises that we mentioned earlier. They do not happen. The political promises, they're made and broken almost even before they are made, they get out of the person's mouth. Relationship promises are broken. How sad, how tragic, how painful. Health promises may be broken. The doc says, this is going to work, you're going to be fine. No more pain, no surgery. A month later, you're on the operating table. You need now six medicines instead of one. The only promises we can stand on, the only promises that we can rely on, heaven and sky, are the promises made by God. And as we go through life, are we trying to stand on those promises or rely on the promises of man? Do we believe Jesus promised that if you don't believe in me, you're going to die in your sins? That's a promise. Do we believe the Lord's promise that unless we repent, we're going to perish? Do we believe that promise in Mark 16:16? He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that disbelieves, he that doesn't believe, he that refuses to believe is going to be condemned. And if we have accepted those promises as true, if we become a Christian, now as we continue to read and study through God's word, do we believe, do we really have faith that what he's promised will take place? If not, we need to go back, I think, and reconsider the promises that God has made and realize that he's not kidding. God's not exaggerating. He didn't just put that stuff in there to fill up the book. But God says, this is what I've said. This is what I mean. And this is what I'm going to do. We serve a God who makes and keeps promises. And if we're trying to live in the right way, that is some of the best news that we'll get this week and this year. Do we want to stand on the promises of God? We believe tonight, because you're here, that's what you want to do. If you've been wavering, maybe you've been faltering, and you'd like some help when it comes to standing on the promises of God, tonight we'd like to help you do that. Or if you're someone who's not a Christian, God has promised forgiveness of sins. Whatever those sins are, if you'll simply become one of his people. We're going to sing the song, Standing on the Promises of God. If we've not been doing that, maybe internally we need to make that choice. This is going to be describe a new direction for me in my life. If we're struggling, may this song motivate us to come and seek the help we need. Let's stand and sing, Standing on the Promises of God.